coming to you from Orange County, California. This is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I am joined, as always, marvelous Max Montana, and our very, very special guest today, the GOAT, Mr. Ed Cohen.
Hi, guys.
So, Ed, how does it feel knowing that if Max and I were chicks, you would be the first guy that we would do?
Flattered, slightly aroused, and scared at the same time. I'm only scared because of me getting smothered.
Well, I thought you might be scared because of how you'd feel afterward. Those lingering emotions.
Yeah, I'd go back and forth with it, but, you know.
It caught feelings. So we're here in Chicago at USAW Nationals, and hometown, home area, at least where we're at right now, of Ed. Let's just take it all the way back. Let's take it all the way back to...
From the beginning.
Yeah, to a young Ed Cohen.
Okay.
How much did you weigh when you were born, and how much of that was head and hands and feet?
It was all head and hands and feet. It was definitely a C-section with a lot of stitches for my mom. She still doesn't talk to me to this day. No, you know what? I played all the regular sports when I was a kid. Basketball, baseball, football. And when I get into high school, I was still short, as I am now.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It's
you didn't
shocking.
Become tall.
Kind of shocking.
I was short.
Compared to then.
My freshman year, I was
4'11", 4'11", 98 pounds. So I didn't go out for baseball or football. I wrestled. It's a 98-pound class. Yeah. I fit right in. So I wrestled. And that's when Pumping Iron came out.
Okay.
So I watched Pumping Iron, and I got hooked. So I started trying to bodybuild, me and a buddy of mine, Jimmy Nichols. We lifted it. He had a universal machine in his basement, a real universal machine with a little bit of free weight. So we did, like, some of, like, the Charles Atlas routines. Uh-huh. You know, he had,
right,
like,
yeah,
30 different courses with push-ups and all this stuff. We threw in a bunch of little stuff with it, with machines. And so I got into bodybuilding. I even tried a contest in 1980, the Central USA, which there were some bad dudes in that. And I took, like, number 900 in the teenage classes before they even had music. You know, I went in there with a bad sunburn, didn't know anything about canon or anything. I'm pale as hell.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'd have a hard time with that anyways.
And then I met Arnold. He was at a Sears store doing some touring after Pumping Iron. And I'm looking at him. I got real close, and I went, shit, I can't be Arnold. He's too tall. So I met Franco at a sporting goods store. He was doing some demonstrations and stuff. I was like, I'm going to be Franco. Because he was like the short guy. Mm-hmm. He was strong, but he was big. And so I tried to be Franco, and then I actually saw, they used to have the USPF Nationals on TV, Wild World of Sports, and I saw Kaz compete. And I was like, wait a second. You can be that big, that strong, and not have to diet and pose on stage. I got my sport. Nice. So then I started powerlifting and just bought Powerlifting USA and started trying my own thing. I maxed out twice a week on all lifts until I squatted 500 pounds.
How long did that take?
Less than a year.
You just hurt a lot of people's feelings. So
yeah, it was less than a year.
Where'd you start at? Like, was your first, do you remember the first time you, like, started with?
Well, I remember the first time I ever deadlifted I deadlifted 435, weighing about 130.
First day ever pulling a bar off the ground.
Yeah, it was just a complete stiff leg after I finished back routine. And it was cold. Someone else was doing the stuff, so I walked up and did it.
What is this? You just pick it up?
Yeah.
Did I do it?
Pretty much.
That's easy.
Is that a record?
Didn't tear anything, so I figured it was okay.
High score? What does that mean? Did I break it?
Yeah, and then I just went to the, I read PL USA and always muscle and fitness no matter what. I could still name all the bodybuilders and everyone and all the stuff from back then, even all the powerlifters. And it just kept morphing from there.
So I
learned along the way.
Right, right. After that first year, did you like start kind of changing things a little bit?
Yeah, I started reading what the routines were like. And a lot of them were pretty similar in Powerlifting USA. And then I morphed a lot of my bodybuilding stuff in there because I still wanted to be big.
Yeah.
So here's what I did. You know, like, I know volume is key, but what I did is I mixed from the very beginning all my powerlifting and all my bodybuilding stuff as one unit. So as my squat went up, my power squat, so did my high bar close stand squat, so did my pause squat, so did my deadlift, so did my deficit stiff leg, yeah. So did my regular deficits, so did my bent rows, so did my benches, my close grips, my inclines, my shoulder presses. So I would cycle all those the same way, and except for like some of the other assistance exercise I kept for the off season, like high bar close stand squats, because I had weak quads. I didn't like front squats. For some reason, every time I did a front squat, my biceps would cramp up, and I could never get the hang of them. So I did high bar close stand squats so I could use more weight and transfer it over. So whatever exercise I did in the off season had to similarly match my regular lift in order for there to be a transfer.
Right, right.
That's what I figured out at a young age. But I cycled all those heavy compound lifts all the time to have them all go up at the same time.
You mean from like from the early part of the training cycle with the high reps to the low reps?
Yeah.
That's what you mean by as they would increase.
And then the off season, like I said, instead of a regular power squat, it would be a high bar close stance and a regular pause squat with no equipment.
Right.
In the bench, it would be more close grips and inclines, but with my feet up in the air. For deadlifts, it would be deficit deadlifts with no belt or stiff leg deficits with no belt.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Is the feet up in the air because your feet can reach the ground?
Pretty much. Thank you.
There's going to be a bunch of those.
It's actually true.
How do you keep those going for the next couple hours?
It's funny, but it is true. It is true. Yeah, I used to have like, at one time I had safe squat shoes, and I had like Kiss, like from the rock Gene Simmons shoes, like platforms shoes. On the bottom of it.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. But, it, you know, whatever worked. I used to try everything, just like everyone today.
Yeah.
Those big heel.
Oh, yeah. But it was all like, it was a big platform.
Yeah.
It was a big platform. No, not the Burt Reynolds.
At some point, once you kind of had some success with the training cycle, you started keeping with it, right? I mean, you basically figured out a routine that was sustainable.
That I could
and worked,
do, but I think the key was, as in most routines, is to pick your numbers correctly.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an ego. I figured, I don't know where I heard it or if I learned it, that if I could do these four training cycles a year and try to get just a little bit better each time. If I did this for 5 years, that was 20 training cycles, and I figured where I'd be.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. So that's I stuck to it religiously. And that's on all my lifts from week 1 to week 12 or however long it was. Every single rep, every single set, every single weight, every single exercise was already planned in.
Yeah.
What I do. I never deviated. I never had to.
Right.
So we just released a video this week, actually, about this exact thing, selecting and progressing weights. Because people could have, you know, you could have the most scientifically, you know, sound, well-drawn-out program, and then you put the wrong weights into it, and the whole thing goes to shit.
Yeah.
So what were some of, how did you pick these weights to set up a 12-week training cycle, a 20 training cycle?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know where your max was mm-hmm. or around it. And then I would say, what's doable?
Yeah.
What's realistic? So then you start at the last week, you move it back. So then after you write all those numbers in, then you're going to do it over quite a few times until you get it right. You know, like that movie with Jim Carrey was 23, where he had all these numbers. I had hundreds of routines and stuff always written out because I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it until I knew for 100% that every week would progress to take me farther and farther and farther. So if I never missed, that's almost 100% of quality reps and sets you got out of a whole training cycle. So nothing was ever wasted. Everything had a purpose. From when every time when I walked in the gym, never said a word. In between sets, a little banter. But everything was focused on that day. Then afterwards, everything was okay.
And yeah, you were picking these weights, progressing these weights, becoming, you know, undoubtedly the greatest powerlifter of all time, and never missing weights and training that kept making you stronger and stronger. And you did that without, you know, with no RPE, with no tendo unit on the bar, with no anything like that. What do you think of a lot of these tools and stuff that people are using in the programs now?
Actually, well, I think they're fantastic because science is science. It doesn't miss usually. But it's how you use them. Don't use them. Use them to replace what should be learned mm-hmm. on the basic level. You could do it. You could put a Tendo unit or something on thing to see how well some stuff is progressing in a way. But in RPE, I never got that. I just knew I'm going to start here. I'm going to do reps. And every week is going to progress to where I know it's doable. If I know it's doable, then that first week when I change from a higher rep to a lower rep or less sets or whatever, I know that week's going to go super easy. So my speed's going to go up and my RPE right. is going to be easy.
Do you think that, you know, you were doing all this stuff by intuition,
yeah.
more or less?
Now they put names on it, and that's great because now someone is made it into a routine and a system, and they're just making money, which is that's what it's all about too.
Do you yeah. think it's caused people to maybe lose touch a little bit with some of the training to not? Maybe have to think as critically.
Yes, they got to learn the basics. What they if they depend on that, then they lose the feel and touch that they're supposed to have with their body. And that's crucial, because no one knows you like your body, so you got to learn it, because you're the one responsible for everything you do in training. You can't say, okay, last week was easy, and I'm scheduled to go up here, but I feel fantastic. My last warm up was so easy. That my Tendo unit said it was so easy, so I should go up higher. But my concept was, if I stick to my routine and my numbers, yeah. I know almost 100% it's going to take me to this number that I want to hit no matter what. So I got to stick to it.
Yeah, it seems like the biggest difference between what you did and what seems like happens all the time is this, like, you got 12 weeks, week number 7, you're supposed to do, you know, in your case, let's say 700 for 5 or something. And the next week, supposed to do 720 for 5. And you know 700 for 5 was easy. It was really smooth. It was good. That, in your mind, it's like, that just means, great, that was an easy workout. Because mm-hmm. next week's still got to be 720. It seems like what happens with people is they get there, they hit that 700 for 5 or whatever it is. Oh, that was great. Next week, I'm going to go 725 yeah. or 730.
Losing sight and, of what yeah, the end goal
realizing
is.
Realizing that really yeah. week 12 at, you know, 1,000 is what you really care about.
Yeah. Or the first set is always good. When you got to do a second and third set of five, that's where you really got to
yeah.
make sure it's easy enough.
Right.
I think, too, when people have that really good feeling day, strong feeling day, and they decide to deviate from the plan,
yeah.
from whatever the plan number is, and let's say it was 700 for 5. That might not be relatable for some people, but it's just whatever number for 5. So 700 for 5, and they think, oh, this is going to be too easy today. I'm going to go 715 for 5. And they do it, and it's great, and it's this big PR. But it's like the absolute limit lift
yeah,
for
yeah.
the day.
What happens for 2 weeks later?
Yeah. yeah. That the training doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, so even though you have
it's
this great
cumulative
workout.
Cumulative thing.
Yeah. That when you have this, you know, what follows a peak? The valley.
Right.
So every time you have one of those big, big workouts, it's gonna mean that you're probably more fatigued for the next one. It's gonna be harder.
Yeah, you're sacrificing your recovery mentally and physically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like those easy workouts, when they feel easy, great. Let them feel easy. Because if you make the easy ones hard, then the ones that are supposed to feel hard are gonna feel even harder.
Exactly.
Thank you to Virus International, sponsor of the Jug Life podcast. Visit virusintl.com and use JUG, J-U-G-G, for 10% off your next order.
So as you developed, you know, the Ed Cohen program, which I'm sure people
can... Yeah, very simple.
Yeah, can Google
it. It's how you apply it. Like, yeah. I think yeah. Einstein says, it's genius is how you apply the simplicity.
Cohen, Quentin Einstein. I don't know if he said that. Do you?
He said something like that.
How you apply simplicity?
I'm paraphrasing.
Einstein,
it.
Ed Cohen.
I know what we look the same.
Yeah, I might have that hair going right now. Who
knows? Yeah, I think that's like that's the biggest thing that is probably the
take your
like,
time
yeah,
to make it right, just to make sure you're going to get the goal that you set out
right,
to do.
Right, but also having a focus on what are you actually trying to do.
Yeah.
You want to do well at a meet in 12, 15, 16 weeks. What you know, it doesn't matter how good you're doing now. I tell it to people all the time, especially weightlifters, where the numbers are a little more different here and there, but you say it doesn't even matter 7 weeks from a meet. It doesn't matter if you squatted a 30-pound PR because you're not at the meet yet.
No.
And so putting yourself in that position, sacrificing everything to get this PR, halfway through the training cycle that isn't on the program or doesn't follow suit is going to just, you're just going
to
tank.
All ramp up to the one goal at the end.
Yeah.
So you're saying it doesn't matter that for 12 weeks I get to post my PRs on Instagram, but then I bomb out of the meet?
That's the worst part of social media is where do you actually see people, how many of them I should say, actually do sets and reps and stuff you do and show their actual routine when all of them are always doing these max reps and this and it's like when's your actual where's your actual routine that you sell that you're supposed to be doing? You're not even doing what you fucking sell.
Yeah, where's the training going on?
Yeah.
I want to see
all the little shit too. I want to see the cool stuff, not just squat, bench and deadlift.
Yeah.
I want to see some of the heavy other stuff cuz here's my concept is it wasn't just squat, bench and deadlift. It was close grips inclines. It was pause squats. It was bent over rows. It was shoulder presses. They all peaked out at the same because you know how many people do all of a sudden they decide, well, let me see how heavy I can go in shoulder presses. Let me see how heavy I can do in triceps or inclines this day or something. And that will fuck everything up because it's a body part and muscles that you're using.
Right, right.
So all of a sudden your shoulders from trying to do too heavy shoulder presses are going to be more fatigued. So that's going to screw up your bench. So, it happens down the line too.
Yeah.
With every exercise.
So, and this is a hard concept to, maybe for people to think about because you were obviously so successful with it. What could Ed Cohen have done better?
I could have peaked a little bit better.
Yeah.
I think that's about it. Everything else was fine. I could have peaked a little bit better. I got such joy out of training and the experience in the gym that even though, I knew I would be able to win. I was very fortunate enough that I was ahead of everyone. But the training part was so fun and so enjoyable hitting these big weights and training. I never maxed out, but instead of hitting 900 for a double in the deadlift,
mm-hmm. Right.
If I would have took 880 for a double and left it, I probably would have pulled 940 that day.
Yeah, yeah.
But, it didn't happen. I'm still happy with it. It's I don't slap myself in the head and scream at myself in the mirror and saying,
damn it, Eddie, you only did 901.
Yuri wouldn't have been able to beat that record if I didn't do that, I don't get into that. It's just,
Well, speaking, that's a good segue.
Okay.
It's man's a professional.
People that have broken Ed Cohen's records.
Yeah. It's becoming a more lengthy list by the day, but, you broke 71 world records, according to Wikipedia.
Yeah,
when I checked
there was a lot of them that I broke myself. The one Hawaii meet.
Yeah,
it's my second squat, my second and third squat, my second and third deadlift, and every one of my deadlifts broke a total record.
Oh,
so that was seven that day.
Well, that's pretty good, I guess.
So you've personally broken 71 world records.
Something like that, yeah.
Because I've been to meets where people have broken 70 records in one meet.
Yeah.
They get 70 medals.
They got their own class in this federation.
So, but now many of your records are being broken, let's first maybe talk about the circumstance that you set these records under and your feelings about what the circumstances are and some of your records being broken.
Okay, some of the deadlift records at 181, 198, and 220, those are set at USPF Nationals under IPF rules. 2 hour weigh-in, no squat bar, no deadlift bar, so a stiff, regular bench bar, and judging tight as fuck. And
well, the other thing you were telling us about, which I never knew, I knew the 2 hour weigh-in, I knew the full meet, I knew the stiff bar, but this idea of the rounds system.
Oh yeah, for the 181 pound one, which was the 1984 Nationals that Larry Pacifico ran in Dayton, Ohio, they had the round system. This is before, or the escalating weight before the round system. So if it was the 181s at the time and the 198s lifted together in one class, so it was just if someone opened at 600, the bar just kept going up.
So this would be like weightlifting style weight progression.
Yeah. So like in the squat, I had I think I went like 749, 782, 804, and I got red lighted. One of the coaches on the side yells, "Just cut it a little bit," right in front of the judges. So I got reds on it. But I mean, I came up with it. But you know, I think I like might have fouled myself on one of those squats.
So, and following yourself in powerlifting would mean
I did my attempt, then I got a minute to call my attempt and 3 minutes to go again.
So you could have maximum 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Between
till you have to start the lift. Yeah.
So when you pulled the 901 deadlift.
No. When I pulled the 793 deadlift at 181, 82 and a half kilos, is I opened up at 749, then a 198 pounder went. Then I had to go again, which would have been better if I followed myself, because that way I only had 1 minute for 1 minute for him to go after his bar was loaded, and then 1 minute for me to go after my bar was loaded, so I only had 2 minutes. So then, yeah, so then I pulled. So then I pulled 793, and those days the weight couldn't stop on the way up, so it stopped, and then I finished it. And like I said, that's with the stiff deadlift, a regular bar, not a deadlift bar. So I got red lighted. Then I had to follow myself and take it again, and then I did it.
Oh, they call that CrossFit.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know what? It's.
You just did it because that's
what
it was,
right? Shape.
I mean, that's just
it didn't matter.
That's just how it is.
You didn't care. You were just in shape. If you're in shape to be able to lift, you could do any damn thing you want. You're just in shape.
Yeah.
Including back-to-back world record deadlift attempts within.
You got no choice.
4 minutes of each other.
Yeah. If you're in shape, you're in shape. Why not?
So, all those differences taken into account, 2 hour weigh-in.
No deadlift bar.
No specialty bars. Full meet. Well, mind you, we're setting, it's setting total world records by hundreds of pounds.
That was 1984 for that one. And 1985 was the one at 198 when I pulled 859 in a full meet.
And was that on the
weight timing too? I don't know if they had started the round system yet then. They might have started it.
That had to. But
that was no deadlift. There was no deadlift bar back then either.
Let me lay out a picnic here in between my deadlift attempts.
Yeah, again. It's taking so long.
So now that the records are getting broken, the only one of those that still stands correct is the 181 deadlift.
Actually, supposedly there was some like Italian guy who pulled 793 in some meet and then was never heard again. So I don't know. But no, that's still alive. There'll be some Russian guy that does it. They're always Russian. But like, no one's done that. Who was the 198er who broke my one? Belev.
Yeah.
But he didn't do it in a full meet and with a deadlift bar in 24-hour weigh-ins. And Yuri Belkin, who's one of the most fantastic, gorgeous sumo deadlifters ever. Yeah. He just did it. He pulled a 903, but with a deadlift bar. I'm happy he had to do it with a deadlift bar. But I mean, a nice guy, he did it. What the heck?
So do you think there should be an asterisk kind of next to these?
Nah, everyone knows. It doesn't matter. It's just part of life. I know it. Everyone else knows it, so I don't care.
Do they know it? Belyev and Belkin know who?
Sure, they know it.
They know.
Or else they'd use a stiff bar and show it.
That's good.
Here's a funny one about Belyev. The first time I met him was in a place called, I think, Bournemouth, England. I was there for the WPC Worlds with some older guys that used to just bench. So they used to go there with their big shirts and bench, and we had a good time. And the first time I met him, I knew one of his coaches. So I walked up in the warm-up room just to shake his hand and say what a fantastic lifter he was, and it's nice to meet him and stuff. It was, I don't know if it was just because he was didn't understand me or what, but I kind of went out to shake his hand, and he kind of went like this and looked away. I was pissed.
He was very quiet.
So his problem was always the grip because he had small hands.
Yeah.
So I walked up to him. I went like this, and I grabbed his hand. I went like this. I put my hand up, which was about this much bigger than his, and I just smiled and went like that and walked away. That was my prick moment.
I had that picture when we were in Australia, 2014 GPA Worlds. And we're at the gym, and it's a bunch of people with the funny story of me driving the 15-passenger van. But it's me, Ed, Dr. Mike, KK, Kirill, Misha Kaklaev. And there's a picture with Ed's hand up.
With the three monsters.
Yeah, next to Kirill, 6'7", Misha, 6'5", KK, 6'3", and they're all hands up. Let's see it right here.
This is ridiculous.
Okay, it's your pinky's very long.
It's this. It's I got a real wide hand.
Yeah.
So if you go like this. I can still do a three-finger palm in a basketball.
That's like an ET thing right there. Almost.
Wow.
At home. So we've had the pleasure of seeing you a few times recently. Just a few weeks ago at the U.S. Open. Biggest powerlifting meet, of the modern
era.
It
turned out not to be. A lot of guys pulled out.
Myself included.
Yeah, I mean, you said some of the stuff online. For her first time doing it, I think she did an exceptional job.
It was the second time. People keep forgetting.
Oh, was it? Well, the first time was at her gym.
Yeah.
This is the first time at a big thing. Some things will have to get better for her to be able to progress. As long as she knows that, then there's not a problem. I mean, I never did anything perfect. I mean, you haven't. Max, he's perfect.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah. And so
you guys got that on camera.
I don't mind someone telling me, did you ever think about doing this? This, I think, would help you. Here's some suggestions. Fuck yeah.
What were some of your favorite big meets that you ever competed at?
Well, let's see. The 84 Nationals that Larry Pacifico ran when I was at 82.5 kilos, that one with the record. The 84 Worlds that year was my first year at the Worlds, IPF Worlds, and they had it in Dallas, Texas. 85 was in Chicago, the Nationals, so it was pretty cool to have all my friends.
Hometown hero.
Yeah, and my brother's there, and I missed my second squat. I fell forward with it, so I had to retake it. But in the meantime, I had to go to the bathroom. So I walked out in the hallway. I'm there at the urinal. My brother and all my friends are in the back of the room. Just by the end of squats, already with like five empty bags of beer back there. My brother's at the urinal with me. Looks over. He goes, "Nice squat, asshole." So I came back and got my last one.
Peeing at powerlifting meets, I find to be the most awkward thing in a singlet.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You go all the way down like a little kid.
Some of the IPF Worlds that were overseas were pretty darn cool, and they have like the whole town and then some show up.
Yeah, that one with Lamar Gant in Australia, right?
Yeah. Australia was a big meet back then. Here's something everyone doesn't know about that is we had a guy named Randy Smith on the team. He was at 82.5 and I was at 220. And I saw him in the back warm-up room. And you know how the suits were back then? They were nothing. I saw him put some stickum on the inside of his suit. I said, "What's that for?" He goes, "Well, it holds tighter." Well, my suits, I just kind of slipped them on. So I put some of that on, and on my first attempt, my suit just freaking exploded. Blew out and blew me back. And there was this guy who was about 6'7", and he caught me. It launched me forward and threw me back where I went flying back into his chest, and he caught me. We were at that GPA Worlds a few years back. Mm-hmm. He spotted me again.
Oh, my God.
70 years old, and he came out in the audience just to spot me for that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So talking about that thin old suit.
Yeah.
If we take 1994 Ed Cohen and give him a 24-hour weigh-in, and take away his old suit, but give him a nice pair of knee wraps.
2.5 meters, because they were 2 meters back then.
Give you some 2.5 meter, brand spanking new.
Okay, 220 pounds?
But on a 24-hour weigh-in with a squat bar and a deadlift bar.
Uh-huh.
What kind of numbers are we seeing?
Probably like a 953 squat.
Okay.
Because I had doubled 9.25 pretty easy in training. And that's with the double gold line knee wraps.
And the 9.25 double in training was with just belt knee wraps?
Yeah. All right. The old school knee wraps.
So if you had a 953 squat.
You put the knee wraps on yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed that if I had someone else put them on, I couldn't squat my squat anymore.
It's too slow.
It was too tight. I had to hit it.
I've had that problem before, for sure.
Because how when they're too tight and you're on the way down, you feel yourself like wavering on the way down. It's like You're like Eddie Murphy in Raw, or Lord God, please help me, don't let something go. You know something's going to go.
So, not super tight knee wraps.
Yeah.
Tight, but not.
My best bench in training with a pause was 565. So let's just say 551, 556. And I doubled 901 in training. So
you always pulled
931, 936, somewhere around there without a problem, especially with a deadlift bar.
Yeah.
Without a deadlift bar, it was going to be nine and a quarter or so. So,
so that's
not too shabby.
That would be a 24-36 total. That's
that would be a 220 too.
About 1,105 kilos. That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
It's all right.
It would only be, that's only 260 pounds, 240 pounds above the world record. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Not bad.
It's a start. Yeah, it's living a start. In the past.
But I thought that for a while, like looking at your 2402 at 220, knowing that you benched 551 in that, knowing that you pulled 901 on the stiff bar, both raw,
yeah,
in single ply competition, but doing them raw, and knowing what you had squatted, I figured that was about the about the number.
Yeah, because the suits back then, I just put them on. You just kind of put them on yourself.
And who knows?
I think a 4-year-old Z suit that runs in it.
If you were really weighing 240 and cut to 220 and get into that whole,
that's the bigger one. Game. The body weight that. Is just ridiculous.
In regards to that, with a lot of the guys that drop that much weight and what they have to do to drop it and put it back on, there's got to be a repercussion in the end. Kidneys or something's got to happen. I mean, I never wish anything bad, but something's gotta give later on, because it's not healthy taking that much off and putting it back on in that short a period of time.
Do you think that should be regulated somehow? Like, what they started regulating that in the UFC, or the simplest way to regulate it would just be to go back to 2-hour weigh-in?
There is, if it was a controlled federation, but no one gives a fuck. You know what? They don't care. It's the wretched refuge. Everyone's going to go fucking crazy and lift whatever they want or find a place to do it. Of course, everyone does something dangerous. Let's just say it that way. I don't think I could ever do that. I mean, I went in 24-hour weigh-in meets, but I never had to cut or anything like that. So I don't know what it's like. But I wouldn't want to have to drop from 245 or 260 down to 220 or whatever some of these guys are doing.
Yeah.
And then put it back on, you know, no, I don't think it's worth it.
Well, what's the
that's,
point,
that's
too,
me,
when,
though.
When everyone's doing it? Everyone's
some other people don't
way,
think
right?
what I did was worth it, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, no one is trying to be an elite powerlifter for their health, that's
no.
for sure.
Yeah.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
I didn't do it for my health. I did it because I was possessed and there was no stopping me. No one could tell me anything. I mean, when I started out, I had these old isokinetic machines in the basement that my dad got me. He was an accountant by trade, so he did some barter work. And had these old isokinetic machines that I would just set the dial for how hard I wanted them, and they were like on ropes. So as hard as I pushed, they got harder and harder, and I would fight against it, and then it would go zzz. And I had a leg press one and a bench one, and I could do all these little variances, and I'd be down there for hours, just hours going crazy on them all the time.
So
that had to help.
Yeah.
Grind Sports Nutrition is the official supplement provider of Team Juggernaut, designed by Renaissance Periodization. There are no-nonsense supplements to fuel your hardest training. Use JUG10 at grindsupplements.com.
So we mentioned the U.S. Open, the big meet, and you said the Hawaii Record Breakers was one of your favorite...
1985.
Your favorite big ones you did.
I was 21, and I think I weighed about 194.
And was
squatted 848, bench 501, and... pulled at 8:54 that meet, 22:04.
Was this meet, because you mentioned Nationals being on TV, was this on TV?
No.
Right. Let's take a look at the young, look at this guy.
I was shredded too. During the deadlift, you could see when I had my shirt off. Ted Arcidi, bench 705 there, he was my roommate.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
I was recognized as Ted Arcidi on the streets of Oakland once.
Yes.
But you can see, like, you know how you get that that kinetic feel when you walk under the bar that you know you got it. I actually had a grin on my face when I was getting under the bar.
Yeah, as soon as you pick it up, it's already over.
That's before I tore my pecs. I've got nice, beautiful pecs then, too. That's kind of low enough.
You cut it real high there.
And you could see my grip. It was closer with a thumbless. Yeah. What happened eventually is everything started getting so tight that on the way up in training, all of a sudden I had a little snap in my flexor tendon. My arm snapped and it went in. I didn't feel anything. And I squatted and benched that day. Then I went home after I iced it. Holy crap.
I had that same kind of thing, a real bad
UCL. Yeah, and I got a little dent in there. And he said, my dad was the... he was an administrator at University of Chicago at the time. So I went to the head of orthopedics, and he just said it was just a tiny little tear in it. He said if that thing would have torn all the way through, you would have been like, you know, Bob Dole with pencils or something. But, and so then I had to change my grip right away. That happened in 85, right before the Nationals. So I had to change my grip and go with a full thumb grip and grab it wider.
I feel I do the... No thumb grip. I can't go near as tight as I used to be able.
Like Milanichev.
Yeah.
But see, Milanichev is not like this.
He's in like a...
He just lets it hang off the back of his...
Yeah.
His like arms are like in a front squat position.
Yeah, it looks like he's cleaned the bar.
Yeah, his wrists are as thick as people's ankles.
Yeah.
All right, so we just got the 838 squat in there. Now going to 501 bench.
848 squat.
848, sorry.
Don't cheat me.
I won't.
And I had a closer grip back then, too. Max's wife got bored and she's leaving us right now.
Audience is leaving.
Jug Life Podcast is too much in front of a live studio audience. Not bad. A little 501 at 194 body weight. And this is...
Years old.
That's a raw bench there.
Yeah.
What's funny is I think people, like your bench press is probably the most underrated.
They sleep on it.
Yeah.
He's a really good bench presser.
There's Ted helping me.
Oh, yeah.
What I've always found unique about, one of the unique things about you is your body is really weird. And it's really weird.
Period. That's yes.
I know there's a compliment in there. It just got slapped.
It is somehow a good body type for all three lifts.
I've got short legs, a long torso, but I'm really wide at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So... if I had a long torso and was narrow, it would screw up my bench.
Yeah. The way that I've described your body to people before, and I do this quite often, by the way.
Thank you.
It's like you were supposed to be 6 foot, 300 pounds, and then they chopped maybe 3 inches out of your lumbar spine and 3 inches out of your femur. Because your lat goes into
all the way
your
down.
Waist. His lat inserts at his waist.
Yeah, I had good back.
And then the little femur, like a Cotton Hill type of scenario almost, in the femur and then the shin. It worked out quite miraculously.
Someone described me as a giant Great Dane puppy that never grew into his paws.
Yeah, that's fair.
Here's one. Willie Bell, who was a really good 242 pounder from Florida before, he told me that I put on baby powder to get more color. That's how white I was.
That's good.
All right, so now we're coming to the deadlift. How much did you pull here?
I pulled 854 was the final that day.
854 at 195 pounds body weight, 21 years old.
Shredded!
If he would have been tan, he would have looked more shredded for sure.
I had a good leap after I did this one, too. I used to be able to take one step and touch a rim on a basketball.
And how tall are you?
I think I used to be 5'6". Not anymore.
Whoa.
How do you like that?
Whoa.
Took flight.
Let's get a freeze frame on that.
You were 21 here?
You just want to see my butt from the back.
Well, possibly.
You got to give the people what they like.
I was like, holy shit.
Wow.
Huh?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's up there.
That is up there.
That is a little leaping leprechaun over here.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that jump should have made a sound effect.
Boing.
<ba-na-na-na-na.
laughs> Damn.
That is an impressive meat. So with this kind of meet, you know, one of the biggest meets of the time.
Mm-hmm.
How is that? You've been to tons of big meets. Yeah. We've been at a lot of the same kind of meets. How do you see this sport of powerlifting evolving? Things for the good, things for the bad.
The good thing is there's so many more athletes involved, and that's across the board. I mean, you've got CrossFitters doing it. You got CrossFitters doing Olympic weightlifting. They actually have helped out all the strength sports immensely. And that's bringing a lot of other people in. I mean, look at the weightlifters. Look how much more the weightlifters are into getting stronger now, too. And the powerlifters are more into doing more mobility work. So there's a definitely exchange. I noticed I was the strongest and the best when I was way more athletic and so not one-dimensional, which is why I do some of the stuff I do now to get some athleticism back. So you got to move your body. You can't just not and just stay in that one motor pattern. It's going to screw you up eventually because your body doesn't know how to adapt to anything else. The great thing is, social media helps it and hurts it. We talked about that. The exposure is great. And then there's a lot of people doing awesome fucking podcasts. Look at you, look at Mark Bell, look at Lane Norton's on there doing a whole bunch of stuff. Bryce Lewis is always out there doing his thing. And you got some really, really good people doing good quality stuff. Duffin's out there doing his thing. So all these guys, at the same time, they're running fantastic businesses. The reason why I think their businesses are excelling, because they're giving really, really good quality content. It has to be quality. You couldn't live with yourself if it wasn't quality. But at the same time, you would have a shit company if it was based on nothing.
I'm too fat to get away with, you know, to just slide by on my good looks. I actually take a lot of pride.
Depending, you know, power bear.
There's a market for everything. I take a lot of pride in being this unaesthetic, and up until recently in the Jug Life podcast, really not very funny, but still popular. That makes me know the stuff must be really
possibilities.
Good. It must be really good if they still listen.
Yeah.
It is, but no, it has to be quality to be able to last. You don't last if your lifts were shit. If my lifts were shit all along, and I do recognize I did one high squat in my life that I don't take credit for. And if everything was based on shit or questionable lifts, I wouldn't be here. So you have to have pride in what you do, and that will last the test of time. It has to. Where's your own pride? Just do it right.
Where was your high squat?
At a WPO meet from Kidder.
I was guessing.
I did a 1038, and I know I cut it like this much. Just by cutting it that much, it was so easy, and I felt so guilty.
Yeah.
I took an $11,000 check the next day. Well, but I don't count that lift. I can't.
But the money still counted.
Yeah, I put the money in the account. But yeah. I don't count the lift. I can't. Yeah. I can't do that.
What were your biggest lifts across all three weight classes? What's your highest regardless of weight?
1019, 578 bench. I missed a 595 once.
In the gym?
No, it was in a meet. I think it was a squishy bench. Count. And when I came down, because I don't have a upper pec here because I tore it, I think I came like this and I sunk in the bench and then I locked out and I couldn't. It was like this. So I got a red light. And,
so you locked out 595, though. You just couldn't, red light.
And the 901 deadlift was pretty easy.
Is that 595 in the blast shirt or?
Just an old blast shirt.
Yeah.
So
cheating. It was cheating.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was glad we got that on the record.
I did 550 for a double in the gym and a 565 raw pause.
I've seen the behind the neck press.
400.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
Yeah. So I used to take a pretty close grip because I like the carryover I got from a closer grip behind the neck, the way it felt on my shoulders and triceps for when I benched. It felt almost the same. So I just did whatever I felt. Like Charles Poliquin gave me a compliment. He said, I have a very, very good kinetic sense. So I would go by feel not what was supposed to. You know what I mean? I would go by feel. Where does it feel like I will get the most carryover where it feels like it should? And it worked.
It's funny how that works out most of the time. Like,
yeah,
the thing that intuitively that's, makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's what we talked about, why you should get back to some of the basics to learn what your body's good at. Like, we've been around long enough where we can look at people and we can judge what their lifts look like and, okay, I want you to point your toes out or point them in or take this much wider of a stance, or put your hands here, or put the bar here. We know what will happen and what's it supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And if we know what it looks like, then we know how it'll feel for them. That's the advantage they have with us. But when guys are starting out from the beginning, they have to do a lot of sets, a lot of reps, and film it to see how it looks. If it looks good, usually it is good.
I think that there's so much value in the search, in one person's own search for that answer. Because if I had to identify one problem with social media in regards to lifting, it would be that because so many of the answers are available, people want to ask the question and get the answer, and then they lose out on that exact experience that you're describing, which finding that answer themselves for whatever it may be, you know, technique, programming, all that type of stuff, is so much more valuable than even coming to a seminar or something and me telling them to do it.
Yeah. Because we're going to tell them what they can get online, but they're going to hear it from us, so it'll sink in.
Yeah.
Which, that's their advantage.
Yeah.
When we do seminars, first of all, because we want to get paid, but we like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it. We do it all the time in the gym, or we're going to do it regardless of whether we do it. if you're in the gym and you watch someone doing something really wrong, you're going to be like, hey, kid, come here. Yeah. You know, you're going to help him anyways.
Yeah, you're going to say something mean to him.
But
first.
Again, it has to be quality.
Yeah. Break them down before you build them up.
How many people will buy the newest supplements, the newest clothes, the newest equipment, shoes, belt, blah, 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 when they could have gone to 5 seminars for the amount of money they paid and cleared up everything from the beginning and now know what now they know
the shit that matters.
The real shit that matters, and then they can dot the I's and cross their T's with some little bit of equipment and supplements that they might need.
Well, we got Eddie Cohen over here still squatting in his 1982 BK Knights or whatever.
Adidas,
yeah. Those torn up things.
Yeah, you superstars. Shell tops, Run DMC, baby.
Yeah. it's a good shoe.
You weren't buying your Romaleos and your Romaleo 3s and your power shoe and every single other one.
I wasn't built to be a quad dominant knee flexion guy. With my short legs and torso being longer, if I try to squat like that, it's just go boom, I'm going right over. So I had to open up my hips and put it all in my butt and hamstrings. And use my back as my lever.
Having the strongest back ever.
But you, I built that back.
Yeah.
You built it. You can, you know how, with volume training, you can't just have a kid do this amount of volume. You got to ease him into it to be able to, handle that. So, but you can condition someone to do some of the craziest damn shit that you ever saw that they might excel at. When I was at the Arnold Classic, this year in Ohio, I met Apollo Ono.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very cool, down-to-earth, regular guy. Knew all about powerlifting because one of his old trainers that used to help him with all his strength coach was a powerlifter by the name of John Schaefer. So right away when I walked up to him, he goes, Eddie Cohen, man, I had a semi, maybe a little more than a semi. Apollo Ono, freaking 7 gold medals or medals, knew who I was. It was cool stuff. But he said... He said that John Schaefer, he goes, he taught me how you powerlifters get ready for that one rep max and how to unleash that in my training. Now, this is a guy who I saw with 1 foot behind his back going up, you know, 50 stairs and doing a full squat on one leg all the way up and all the way down. And he's saying we had to unleash the crazy. Yeah. But look what he conditioned himself to do to be the best. So we can all do that. That's all I did from the beginning. I just did a little differently, but that's all I knew. So I made it, and I owned it. All the guys now, I think, with all the volume and stuff they do on all the main exercises, I think they're missing out on some valuable assistance stuff that, as it is, it's an assistant. So it's going to fill, like I said, dot the I's and cross the T's so there's not a weakness, so the motor pattern still goes accordingly. And I think it protects you from injury.
I think it's funny because, like, probably the three of us, and for a lot of most people that came around or started this stuff younger, before, like, the really before, like, Instagram and YouTube were big, were we just went in and did stuff, or you had a coach, or you just, it doesn't matter what it was, like, I'll bang your head against the wall 100 times and that it'll work, right?
Yeah.
And so you just kind of get in and start pushing and pushing and doing stuff, and you have this, like, this massive work ethic and this big driving force behind you. Whereas now it seems like sometimes people can fall into this place where they're so concerned with having the exact right answer, they're afraid to do anything. They're like paralyzed by the fact that if it's not perfect, the
it's
right
like,
answer is
okay,
perfect.
Okay, if they read, here would be is, no, Chad Wesley Smith says right. Don't do that. No, Johnny Candido, no. Chris Duffin, no. Eddie Cohen, no. Max says, don't do it this way. This is the way I have to do it.
Right,
it's like, you're not qualified yet.
Yeah.
You know, how long does it take for a newbie to get the right base? It's a few years sometimes before all of a sudden they really start to be able to excel when everything's filled in the way it's supposed to.
Well, that's one thing I think.
Take your time and get the process down.
One thing I think is really special about what a lot of what Chad does, you know, Juggernaut, and has always been kind of like that, the information is provided as like a roadmap, you know. Hey, here's the principles you should follow, you know, like adhere to these ideas and rules and build the program from there. There isn't some squat this many times a week program. That's not right for anybody. Some guy who squat 10 times a week, some guy squat 3 times a week, 1 time a week. It's not the actual answer aren't as important as in order to get better, you've got to do these things. Some guy's going to do them a little more than you. Some guy's doing them less than you. But find what those things are.
Yeah, a basic program.
Yeah.
And then everyone will deviate from it a little
right.
bit.
Right.
Yeah, to be able to inform, I think the principles and stuff are so important and why what on its face seems like such a simple question. How many times a week should I squat? One of the most common questions I ever get. But I'll never answer it because you can't from, you know, when someone asks that question on Instagram, I can't give them a right answer. I can only give them incomplete answers at best.
What are you doing now?
Yeah. Because if I say 3 times a week, you know, and that's the answer they want. They want a number.
What are you doing now? How are your lifts going?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it, right? Because the question is, what are you doing? And if it's, I don't know yet, then you got to do something first.
And the answer, whatever it is, it might be right now, but 6 months from now, when you're stronger, you're in a different phase of training, whatever, then it might be wrong.
Or when all of a sudden they get a 9-to-5 job, they don't have the time, they have time restraints and stuff.
Yeah.
How do we fit it in? Well, then that's where they're not going to know. And someone like you, who does it for a living and has seen thousands of other people do it, this is how we can fit it in.
Yeah, and you teach the reason, this is why we want to do it more or why you'd want to do it less, depending on these different circumstances. Then you have every answer. You have the answer for every time rather than just the answer.
A lot of times I don't think
moment.
it's always perfect, but it's going to be the closest thing to perfect that you're going to be able to manage to still be able to get in the gym and make results.
Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing too. I think that with one thing that I credit you with, you know, giving me that sense of this really, really important thing is sustainability. Because I look at like what you talk about and I saw, you know, just reading your biographies and stalking you and stuff like that.
Watching you while you sleep.
Yeah, those kind of just normal things, you know, in the shower where you're there. But when you talk about, it's like you look at your program and how it's laid out, it's so sensible because it makes sense from the standpoint of like, this could last me 10 years. You could take somebody from day one or, you know, the start of this and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it without any real sense of like you're going to fall apart and you know this one training cycle is going to put 20 kilos on my total. What happens the next training cycle? Mm-hmm. And so that sustainability is a huge component of any sport, but you embody that, your training stuff embody that so much that it's definitely like I would say that's the distinguishing factor of what I think just, your stuff is, then
try to get better.
Right. The process is more important.
Five more pounds. Yeah. How do I put five more pounds on the bar?
But look, here's the way I describe it. If during the course of 1 year, four training cycles, let's say, with a little bit of downtime and off time and fucking around, I made progress on my bench, 5 pounds. I made 5 pounds on my close grip, 5 pounds on my incline, 5 pounds on my behind the neck press, 5 pounds on my bent over row, 5 pounds on my regular deadlift, my regular bench, my regular squat, my pause squat, my high bar close stand squat, my stiff leg deadlift, my deficit deadlift with no belt, and a couple little pushdowns or something. It's just something else. But if I did that 4 times a year.
Yeah.
Now, let's say I just got my bench stronger, my squat stronger, and my deadlift stronger 5 pounds a year. Cumulative effect, look at when all those exercises get stronger, what they do to you as a total package.
Right.
It's so much greater. That's the way I thought.
Trifecta provides pre-cooked organic food delivered right to your door weekly to help fit with your Renaissance diet, fuel your hard training, improve your recovery, and make your life easier. Visit trifectanutrition.com/juggernaut.
How much different was Ed Cohen program in 1995 versus Ed Cohen program in 1985?
I think almost pretty much the same after 95. Then I couldn't squat twice a week. I would do like pause squats on a second day. But besides that, not a lot different. Now, when I got a little bit older than that, I couldn't do as many high reps in the squat and deadlift because my strength level was so high that if I did it, it just destroyed my nervous system. I was dead.
Yeah, if you're having to do sets of 10 at 650 squat.
No, it was higher than that. I remember hitting 10 with 688 or something. With Rick Steiner there, one of the Steiner brothers. Yeah.
That's not Rick is Scott. That's Big Papa Pump.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was, well, actually their name was Rex Steiner. So Scott Rex Steiner and Rob Rex Steiner. Okay. Rob was in the business first, so he cut it off. Good. And they were both All-American wrestlers at Michigan's now. Now, Rob, backstage one time in Chicago, he was walking around. They were on the road a lot, and he looked at me and went, boom, sweep me, put me right on my back without even blinking. I was just laying there like
that's
that.
That's actually part two of this episode is a wrestling match between you and Max.
That's not going to
go lube,
well.
Shorty. All right. Yeah, people are always looking for the next one, next Michael Jordan, next whatever. Do you think that there's someone you see in powerlifting now as the next Ed Cohen?
Someone like Belkin. But he has to settle down and not do so many meets and try to go so crazy when he does them. If he plans it out and takes his time a little bit better, he'll grow mentally and physically at the same time, and he'll pull 950 no problem and hold on to it.
I think it's tough maybe, too, to reach the same level of notoriety or whatever without true national championships.
Yeah,
unified world championship.
It is, because you know what? We didn't get to pick and choose our meets or get catered to. So when you went to the Nationals or Worlds, you're not fucking special. I noticed when I went to some of these other meets and then I went back to the USPF Nationals for my last meet that I wasn't catered to. Dude, you better get ready. I'm like, what? You realize that, you know, real life is a little different than getting catered to.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
That's a good point.
Well, that was awesome. Ed, thank you so much for
joining us. Oh, thanks you guys. You guys do a great job.
Well, you did have gotten a special
I mean, you guys aren't my buddies, but I've always been fans, too.
Where can people find you, learn more about you?
Just go to Instagram, at Eddie Cohen. I'm always on there checking stuff out.
DDY underscore Cohen or all one word?
One word. It's just all one word. EDDY Cohen.
We'll put it up on the screen. Yeah. And can they still buy your book on Amazon and stuff?
The e-book's on Amazon, so it's a lot cheaper. I mean, I have some regular copies.
How do we get a regular copy?
I'll give you a regular copy, but those are like in my parents' house underneath the stairs hidden.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few cases left.
Really?
Yeah.
I have one.
I want to get one.
Yeah, I'll get one. I'll bring them back one Saturday night when I come back here. See, you know what I noticed when I'm around here? What did I say to the guy in the elevator when we got in the elevator tonight?
Get out of my way?
No. Oh,
the other guy.
I said, when the hell did they start making Olympic weightlifters with arms that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Guys, I'm here at the USAW Weightlifting Nationals, and the women and men are not the same women and men that they used to be. These people are unbelievably, physical specimens out of this world. If you're a fan of strength and stuff, and you're in the Chicago area in Lombard, the Westin Hotel, come by and check this shit out because it's pretty incredible.
Well, this won't be up till Tuesday, so.
Either way. But, it's pretty cool. I love watching just the way these people move. How can't you not?
Oh, and they have a coach with us.
Hey, I did one snatch once.
Really?
Yeah, it was a muscle snatch because I didn't know how to do it.
Oh, that's right.
My traps were sore for 4 days. It was 286, 130 kilos.
Really?
I told Colin that earlier when we were in the training hall.
Yeah.
I was like,
I did one warm up and then hit it. I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, Ed would be the muscle snatch world record holder with that back.
Yeah.
For sure.
Montana, where can they find you?
You can find my Instagram, max_Ada, or Facebook, or email max@jtsstrength.com.
That was one thing that I missed. We're big on middle names in the show. Chad Wesley Smith, Max Montana Ada.
Edward Ignatius Cohen.
There you go.
Goodness gracious, St. Ignatius.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching or listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys. We really appreciate it.
If you like the podcast, go give us a 5-star review on iTunes. This episode was brought to you by Milligrams and Kilograms. The more you take, the more you make. It's a lifestyle. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith, and at Juggernaut Training on Instagram and Facebook. Filling up your newsfeed all day. Subscribe to the YouTube, and we'll see you next week.